Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading a story called Miracles Cast in Blood. This is a viewer-submitted story sent in by Jarrett, so I know you're going to enjoy this one. Thank you to Jarrett for sending this one in. I hope you enjoy it. This should be about four parts, so we'll get started right now. Joey Sanders struggled to break free as he strained against cold, unyielding steel. The handcuffs were tight, their edges biting into his skin as he shifted on the damp, slightly moist mattress. Something wasn't right. No, everything wasn't right. During his weeks of captivity, he'd never been in this room before. The air hung thick and sour, tinged with the metallic tang of rust and something darker, something rancid. Above him, a red light flickered sporadically, making the room appear like a photography lab. The sensation was oppressive, unnatural, and profoundly disturbing. He craned his neck, his breath shallow as he scanned the corners of the room. Shapes loomed and churned at the edge of his vision. It was then he realized, with sickening dread, that someone was coming. He could feel it. The rattle of chains broke through the suffocating trepidation as Joey flailed, panic tightening around his chest like a steel band. Thrashing about, he desperately tried to escape, pushing against the cuffs until bloody lines were etched into his wrists. And then it came. The heavy metal door was thrown open, the sound scraping through the room like a fork dragging on a plate. Joey froze, his breath catching in his throat. What slid into the room wasn't immediately clear, just a thin, bony form swathed in a heavy, dark blanket one might buy at a department store. It advanced slowly, inexorably, its legs dragging along the floor like a cripple who'd lost their wheelchair. From somewhere beyond the pounding of his pulse, another sound emerged. Footsteps, sharp and unhurried, accompanied by the faintest hint of a chuckle. Dennis Randall stepped into the room, slender, early 40s with a droopy hangdog mustache, flowing Hawaiian shirt and cargo shorts. Looked like he'd been dressed by Jimmy Buffett. He swaggered into the room with his creepy trademark grin, bent over and tore the blanket away in a single motion, revealing what lay beneath. Joey chanced a peek and wanted to die when he saw it. It was leashed, collared like a dog, and yet it seemed as if no earthly restraint could contain the thing that loomed in the hellish red glow as it bucked and retched, chomping at the bit to be let loose. Its shape defied explanation. At first it appeared like a monkey, all hunched over before dissolving into nothing, only to reassemble in grotesque, maddening ways every time Joey blinked. It breathed, a slow, wet rasp that, despite its frail resonance, seemed to vibrate in Joey's bones. Dennis tugged on the chain harshly, drawing the thing closer to him. He grinned that awful grin and said, "It's time for the goddess to feast." The words echoed in Joey's ears long after they were spoken. A muffled scream erupted from behind the tape, sealing his mouth, a garbled animalistic sound of pure terror. Around him, the other prisoners began thrashing wildly, their own fear surging into a cacophony of muffled cries and rattling restraints. Dennis reveled in it, his expression alive with perverse delight as he held the leash taut. He leaned down close to Joey, the rancid breath of the thing slamming into his nostrils like a fetid pile of garbage. "You'd be perfect," Dennis said, his voice cooed. "But you're too important." Joey's vision swam, his heart hammering in his chest as he lost control of himself, his mind slipping into primal madness. He felt his bladder go as the thing began to move towards the side of the bed, its shifting form crawling towards him, blotting out everything else in the room. As it closed in, the only sound that remained was the rattling of chains and the wet, guttural rasp of something that should not exist. Suddenly, the chain was wrenched back, and Dennis cackled like he'd told a grandiose joke. "Oh boy, I really got you, didn't I?" Tom Harrington sat in Monroe County Circuit Court and bit his lower lip, waiting for the man in front of him to get what he deserved. The hard wooden bench creaked as he shifted uncomfortably in the stifling heat. Tom heard the presiding judge clear his throat and felt his heart skip a beat as the doughty old man began speaking. I'm going to be frank with you, Mr. Randall, the judge intoned, rolling up his sleeves as if to physically chastise the man before him. Some here may be convinced that I should sentence you for a lengthy term. Should? Tom thought, panic worming its way into the outer regions of his mind. What does he mean by should? The judge went on. On paper, soliciting an 8-year-old girl, that kind of material isn't just wrong, Mr. Randall. It's abhorrent. He pushed up his glasses with his ring finger as he sifted through the pile of probation reports on his desk. The old man's eyes flickered over to Tom, his mouth drawn and solemnly, and in that instant, Tom knew justice would not be served. With that being said, I don't see enough convincing evidence that you displayed such imagery. Furthermore, when I look at these reports made by your supervising officer, the judge shot a glance over to a mustached man, his gold badge glistening over a plaid suit jacket. I can tell you I'm making strides. If you had touched a hair on that girl's body, I'd have let you out in handcuffs right now and thrown away the key for 10 years. But you didn't. You did, however, violate the terms of your parole. Tom wanted to scream. How could they let this happen? It was unthinkable. Letting a man like Dennis Randall off the hook after what he'd done? Bile rose to the back of Tom's throat. All hope evaporated like oil in a hot pan. The judge wagged a finger. So I'll be lenient. 6 months house arrest. The gavel slammed down. Tom flinched in his seat, holding in the shock. He abruptly rose, buttoned his blue blazer, and made his way to the exit of the courtroom. Fighting through the crowd, he turned to see Dennis Randall in his rumpled suit coat, high-fiving his grimy, low-life defense attorney. A puckered expression overcame his face as he hid a smirk. The smugness was revolting. "Hey, Dennis!" Tom shouted over the crowd. He couldn't help himself. The man glanced up through his dark aviator sunglasses but didn't say anything. He didn't dare in here, not after the break he'd just gotten. "I hope you burn in hell!" The ragged shout felt good. Oh, so good, and suddenly Tom was lunging towards the pile of garbage. Fists clenched, teeth bared. Arms shot out, holding him back like a rabid dog. Pandemonium ensued. Dennis backed away, hands held high with that characteristic smirk. Tom's shouts morphed into a sob as he sagged against the crowd. The rich, oak-paneled walls threatened to strangle Assistant District Attorney Jessica Neal as she paced Judge Hal Tyson's chambers, her ostentatious high heels clicking sharply on the polished wooden floor. This was the first case she'd ever lost, and a bench trial to boot. That made it sting all the more. She'd been confident going in, perhaps even a bit arrogant, and had subsequently come crashing back down to earth. Granted, it wasn't as if she were a Harvard grad, but she came from a respectable law school. In the 3 years since her last clerkship, she'd made a name for herself as a relentless fighter. Some of the older, more conservative folks in this small Wisconsin town weren't sold on a woman, especially a younger woman, as a local prosecutor. But the results spoke for themselves. She'd never lost a case. DUIs, domestic violence, and even a murder conviction. Until now. So she stood here in this stifling room, her arms crossed, her anger threatening to boil over. "Your Honor, with all due respect," she began but stopped herself, realizing she was becoming flustered. "I need an explanation. 6 months house arrest? That man preys on children." She jabbed a thumb over her shoulder to the closed door that led back out to the courtroom. Her shoulder-length blonde hair fluttered from side to side as she shook her head in bewilderment. Hal couldn't be bothered to look up from the pile of papers covering his desk. He fumbled through the stack absently, licking his fingers to separate them. Occasionally, he'd uncap his pen and scribble a signature on a black line. She stood in the center of the room, waiting. When it became clear he wasn't going to reply, she marched over to his desk, leaned on it with both hands, and pointedly said, "We had witness testimony, corroborating evidence and proven psychological distress from the victim. We know Dennis Randall plucks kids from this community and brutalizes them." She heard her voice rising. Hal finally looked up and frowned, hand trembling from an undiagnosed ailment. He took off his wire glasses and placed them on his desk. Clutching his shaky hand in the other, the tremor abruptly stopped. "Counselor?" Please have a seat. He gestured to one of the elegant armchairs opposite him, a chair that carried the weight of countless defeated attorneys. Jessica wasn't sure she could sit. She found herself fidgety, needing to disperse some of the indignation that had built up inside her. But alas, she gripped the tufted backrest, smoothed down her skirt with her free hand, and slowly, uneasily, lowered herself in. The leather squealed under her as she sank into the chair, her discomfort palpable. She gave the judge a testy smile but crossed her legs to give the appearance of decorum. She knew better than to waltz into a judge's chambers and demand answers. It was a legal taboo of sorts, something that an attorney did not do, for it could mean career suicide. But this felt different. No, it wasn't that she lost. She understood that was an eventuality, but rather it was the way the ruling was handed down. It went beyond judicial discretion. House arrest didn't fit the crime whatsoever, and Jessica wanted to know why it was levied. Hal loosened his striped tie and cleared his throat. "Miss Neal, the evidence you presented was insufficient and did not warrant a severe sentence." Jessica felt her throat work. She shifted in her seat and spoke, her voice riding a knife edge of hostility. "With all due respect, Lizzie Harrington selected Dennis Randall in a lineup. We have photographic examples of the illicit images he showed her, with his fingerprints, I might add. In my professional estimation, Dennis Randall is leading a cult."
"A cult?" Hal laughed aloud. "Why now, Miss Neal, that is quite a speculation."
Jessica bit her lower lip.
"But we all know he's up to no good. The more times we kick this can down the road, the more innocent people he ruins."
"Miss Neal, while your enthusiasm is commendable, I must remind you that this courtroom operates on facts and substantiated evidence, not conjecture or theatrics."
Hal held up a veiny, portly finger.
"First, while it is true that Miss Harrington identified Mr. Randall in a lineup, eyewitness testimony is notoriously unreliable, particularly when provided by a young woman recovering from perceived trauma. Her situation influenced her judgment, especially when you consider that her story changed not once, but twice. She reported memory issues. Her therapist diagnosed it as amnesia during key blocks of time, casting further doubt. The lineup you reference? Unreliable. Miss Harrington was unsure of her perpetrator's appearance and changed her mind numerous times. Therefore, it is the duty of this court to ensure we do not convict an innocent man based on emotional testimony alone. Furthermore, Mr. Randall claimed she visited him consensually and brought forward witnesses to testify in support of this claim. Miss Harrington, the party you represented, I might add, had no such witness to speak on her behalf." He held up another sausage digit next to the first. "As for the so-called illicit images, I understand that Mr. Randall's fingerprints were found on these materials. However, has it been established beyond a shadow of a doubt that these items were in his possession at the time of the alleged crime? It would be irresponsible to ignore the possibility of contamination, especially given the chain of custody issues raised during the pretrial hearings that you had no answer for. Must I remind you that these photos sat in the back of a squad car overnight, thus bringing into question their credibility? Nowhere in your case did you prove that Mr. Randall actually showed Mrs. Harrington the images, the possession of which, may I remind you, is not inherently a criminal offense. I will acquiesce, however, that Mr. Randall stepping foot on school grounds does violate the terms of his parole, which is why I sentenced him with house arrest." A third finger shot up. "And finally, your claim. Your professional estimation, as you so eloquently put it, that Mr. Randall is leading a cult. I would advise caution, Miss Neal, in making such inflammatory and unsubstantiated statements. This court does not rule based on wild speculation or sensationalist theories. If you wish to pursue such a narrative, I suggest you bring hard evidence linking this alleged cult to the charges at hand. Otherwise, I fear you risk undermining the credibility of your case."
Hal leaned back smugly, his mouth gesticulating into a faint smirk, the way one does when they've got a pair of aces in poker.
"Now, unless there's additional evidence that directly and incontrovertibly ties Mr. Randall to the alleged crimes, this court is prepared to proceed with the ruling that it was given. And let me remind you, Miss Neal, that this courtroom is not the place for personal vendettas.
Jessica was left speechless. Yes, now it became clear. She was destined to lose this from the onset. Why had she even taken this to trial? She shook herself. She knew why. Seeing the pain in Lizzie Harrington's eyes, the despair in her parents. It was the reason she got out of bed each morning. And yet, for this to happen to them, it must feel like a slap in the face. To cap it off, there wasn't a damn thing Jessica could do about it. Not now. Not unless Dennis jumped on the recidivism train. Jessica scooted back in her chair, her knuckles whitening, knowing she was toast. Despite her inner turmoil, she held his gaze, her voice subdued but no less sharp.
You're right, Your Honor. Procedure is everything in this courtroom, but it seems to me you're awfully quick to give Dennis Randall the benefit of the doubt, and not the girl whose life he destroyed. We have Randall's fingerprints on illicit materials, and an ID from the victim. Contamination?
No, Your Honor. A filing error doesn't erase the evidence. Hal's smirk didn't falter, but she caught the faintest twitch at the corner of his mouth.
Miss Neal, we both know this wasn't a filing error that made me rule the way I did. That added to it, sure, but the law is the law and I uphold it to the letter. Not to whatever preconceived notion you have worked up in your head. As for your emotional plea, I suggest you learn to accept a ruling with grace.
Jessica stood abruptly, straightening her suit.
Grace? No, Your Honor. I'm sorry, but I need the truth.
She spun and strode toward the door. Just as her hand wrapped around the brass doorknob, she paused and glanced back over her shoulder.
By the way, if Randall hurts someone else, I hope you remind yourself of our conversation.
I don't want to say I told you so. Without waiting for a reply, she pushed open the door and walked out, the echo of her heels cutting through the silence. Marjorie Harrington leaned back in the passenger seat of the Lincoln Town Car and closed her eyes, a single tear leaking out from between her eyelids. Aside from her sniffling, Tom's labored breathing was the only audible sound between them. The car's tailpipe coughed a steady stream of exhaust fumes as they sat in the empty parking lot of the courthouse. Finally, she wiped her eye and glanced at him.
What now?
She asked. Tom bit his lip and shook his head.
What now? What now? What do you mean, what now?
He snapped. She flinched and averted her gaze.
I don't know. I just thought...
Her voice faded until it choked off completely.
Thought that they'd do the right thing?
She nodded.
After everything she's been through, I just feel so awful for her.
His bellicose voice snapped again.
You don't think I do?
She placed a hand on his shoulder that he angrily shrugged off.
Don't touch me!
She scoffed.
Tom, what has gotten into you?
Eyes ablaze, he shot her an "Are you kidding me?" look, and swirled his tongue around in his mouth. He wanted to throttle her.
What's gotten into me? What's gotten into you? I mean, seriously, what's gotten into you, huh? Our daughter sneaks out of school, gets all touchy-touchy with a guy twice her age, and you just sit there, a wimpy, whining, groveling woman, and say how bad you feel for her. Meanwhile, I work all day, come home to a disaster of a house, a wife with a half-empty bottle of who knows what, and a daughter who's getting hooked up with the biggest creep in town. Oh yeah, mother of the year you are.
Marjorie's eyes seethed pugnaciously.
Don't you put that on me? Don't you dare put all that on me?
Oh yeah, well why not? Not like you do anything but bitch and complain anyway. Might as well put it all out in the open.
She reached over the center console and slapped him across his right cheek. The fingers left white-hot imprints over his flesh that quickly smoldered into a bright red, mascara running like black waterfalls. She leaned in closer and shouted,
"Do you have any idea how much I've beat myself up over it? Do you? Every time I see her, I remind myself of that at night. When she called, who came and picked her up? Me or you? Me, I did. Well, you were stuck at work in the damn office of all places. I drove out at 1 a.m. in order to pick up our daughter. She didn't even know where she was in the middle of the damn woods, Tom. You didn't see how mangled her clothes were. I did. You didn't see how hurt she was. I did. I told her to tell them the whole story. That, yeah, he took her and did stuff to her. He assaulted her. I told her, hey, honey, let's go down to the station and they'll do tests. They won't hurt, I promise. She didn't want to. I couldn't force her. What kind of mother would I be if I did? She begged me to let her shower. How can you tell your own daughter no when she asks you that? I was the one who had to help her through that, not you.
A long silence overcame them. Marjorie collected herself as best she could and then added,
You think you're the only one who wants that bastard dead? You're not. I want him torn to pieces. Not just dead, but mutilated. I want his hands sawn off so he can't ever touch a child again. I want his feet chopped off so he can't walk to another child's house. I want his eyes yanked out of his head so he can never look at another child. I want him castrated so he...
She broke down in her hands, weeping. Tom reached out a shaking hand to comfort his wife, but drew it back. A frown delved between his eyebrows as he threw his head back, listening to her body quake like waves on a rough sea. Finally, she composed herself by wiping makeup-tinged tears and trails of snot with her palm and smudging them on her skirt, leaving a glistening trail on the black fabric.
I want to go home to be with her, she said.
He nodded silently, put the car in drive and began rolling. The tension became unbearable, so he said it. Let's do it. She looked at him.
Do what?
Kill him. She snorted.
What, and leave Lizzie all alone with us in prison? Ha!
The laugh was derisive and harsh. I'm serious. I want him dead. And that's the end of this part. I really hope you enjoyed it. I think this one is going to be a spicy, spicy meatball, if I may say so. If you enjoyed this story, well, I would love it if you'd subscribe on YouTube and follow on Spotify, either or, because I want you to be around for the rest of this series. Thank you, Jarrett, for sending this long story in. This is actually one story that I'm breaking into parts because it is about a 2-hour read. So I hope you enjoyed it. Let me know how excited you are. Hey, if you'd like to support this channel and support what I do, head on over to Patreon and consider supporting the channel. If you'd like to join our Discord, you can do that too. Links in the description. It's pretty chill. And hey, it's Christmas, or at least it will be Christmas when this comes out, or Christmas has just passed. But either way, Merry Christmas. I hope you had a great time. And I guess with all that said, we'll see you in the next part. Take care now. Bye-bye then.